the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi everyone, I'm Justine Hall, and thank you for listening to today's edition of Lifetime Planning. We're excited to be welcoming Tanya Hester back into the podcast. She's the author of Work Optional, Retire Early, The Non-Penny-Pinching Way, which she previously discussed with Jim Poplava on the show. She's a former many things, including a former political communications consultant, public radio consultant, yoga and spinning teacher, civil servant, and even a former money novice. And in case you missed her previous interview with Jim, which I'd highly suggest you go back and listen to, and we'll make sure that that's linked on financialsense.com, where this interview will be posted, Tanya retired early from formal employment at age 38 along with her husband. She now devotes her time to fun and purpose, writing her award-winning financial blog, Our Next Life, podcasting on the Fairer Sense, gathering women together to talk about financial independence at her Sense Positive retreats, volunteering in her community, and skiing, hiking, biking, paddling, and climbing around her home in North Lake Tahoe, California. She's also researched and explored every aspect of early retirement and has spoken at places like Google and Tesla, has a regular column with MarketWatch, and has been featured in Forbes, Time, Bloomberg, you name it. The New York Times has even called her the matriarch of the women's FIRE movement. And FIRE is financial independence, retire early. So Tanya, thank you so much for coming back on the show, and we're delighted to speak with you again.
Thanks so much for having me. I am thrilled to be back.
Your book, Work Optional, Retire Early, The Non-Penny-Pinching Way, really thoughtfully and clearly outlines how just about anyone can make early retirement, semi-retirement, or a career intermission possible. You provide useful and detailed chapters on everything from identifying what's important to someone in life to creating a money mission statement, investing, finding health insurance, and so much more. Work Optional is a really crucial tool for anyone interested in the FIRE movement. And again, FIRE is financial independence and retire early for anyone who isn't familiar with the term. So, Tanya, how did you come across the FIRE idea? And were there other people out there kind of doing the same thing when you first decided that this is what you wanted to do?
You know, the idea of FIRE as a term, which, by the way, I don't love for reasons we don't have to get into, but the concept of early retirement was one that my husband Mark and I actually discovered after we were already down the road of saving towards something. We didn't know exactly what, but we knew we didn't want to work in our careers forever because we loved a lot about them, but we just knew that the pace was going to have a really detrimental effect on our lives. The pressure and the stress were just a lot. And so we had started saving. We jokingly called it our 10-year plan. And we said, okay, within 10 years of moving from LA to Tahoe, we want to be able to just hang out here in Tahoe. And we sort of let a few years pass before we truly had a plan behind that. But in the end, the 10-year plan ended up being just the 6-year plan. And about 3 years before the end of that was when I started blogging. And that was really when I discovered that, oh, there's actually kind of a movement here and there are other people blogging about it. But at the time, which was about 5 years ago, there weren't that many people blogging about financial independence and early retirement. I suspect there were plenty of people who had pulled it off and were living in early retirement, but they just weren't blogging about it. So we didn't get to see what their lives were like or hear from them. But then, of course, since then, the concept has really exploded. And so now you can't even count all the blogs and podcasts and folks talking about it and doing it. But I do think that there is a huge movement behind the scenes that isn't the public side of it that's out there living really great lives.
And you wrote a blog post in 2018 called Retirement Needs a Rebrand. And I couldn't agree more. It's sort of comical. A quick Google search for the definition of retirement says it's the action or fact of leaving one's job and ceasing to work. And Merriam-Webster defines retirement as a withdrawal from one's position or occupation or from active working life. And these definitions all sound sort of morbid and like once you retire, you know, that's it. You're done doing anything of purpose or working ever again. And I think that that narrative can be quite damaging. And in your post, Retirement Needs a Rebrand, I wanted to read a little excerpt of that. You write, "The story we've been telling about retirement as a society is still relatively new. People haven't been retiring in droves for much more than a century, but that's still plenty old in terms of our personal memories. And our memories have strong images and associations with retirement that mostly have to do with people in their later years, people with lots of gray hair, grandparents, elderly neighbors, aging parents, and those are the stories we know, so those are the stories we attach to retirement. But, you write, powerful as those stories are, they don't dictate what retirement is or what retirement could be. because retirement is evolving. Younger people are opting in, and traditional retirees are taking on second act careers and other fun work. And so its definition is changing, and those of us pursuing a different path in life are some of the ones changing it. And the crux of this article, sort of the idea that retirement should really mean taking control of your time. So can you talk a little bit more about this and why retirement needs a rebrand?
Yeah, and I researched this more for the book, Work Optional, and found that the very earliest pensions in the modern era, anyway, were in the late 1800s in Germany, and they weren't even meant to completely replace work. They were just to allow older workers who were less physically able to work a bit less. So the idea of retirement wasn't even full retirement until the 20th century. In the early 1900s, we started to see more movement there, but most people don't know that age 65 has no magical meaning behind it. It basically is the age at which the actuaries, when they were writing the Social Security Act, said, oh, hey, the numbers balance out here if we let people start to take their benefits at 65. And so this idea of pegging your whole life to this number that a couple of math nerds, which I say that with all love to math nerds, being one myself, but that is not a great thing to shape our whole lives around. And what's been really powerful for me is realizing that the idea of retirement as working or not working is the wrong way to think about it. Really, there is the phase of life when we have to work for money. And then there's the phase of life, hopefully, if you're able to save and invest and get yourself to a place of some financial security, when working for money becomes a choice. It becomes optional, or it becomes something that you can, you know, you can work and not worry about how much it pays, or you can work and do it totally for free. You have all of that choice. But yeah, to your point, I think the idea that we are literally retiring people and now you just have to sit on the bench and do nothing and contribute nothing to society is crazy. People are living longer and longer. And so why wouldn't we want to be thinking about our lives in terms of chapters? You know, you've got the chapter when you're building your nest egg for the next phase. When you're working, you're doing kind of the standard career chapter. And then you've got the next chapter when you just get to decide how to spend your time. And if it happens to include work, great, but it doesn't have to. And that's up to you.
Definitely. And that's sort of what I think the financial independence part of that means is you're not necessarily retired, like you said, doesn't mean, okay, I'm not working anymore ever again. It just means that you're financially independent and can choose the work that you want to do, correct? I mean, that's the main idea is you're financially independent and now it's up to you to choose, well, how do you want to spend your time and taking control of your time?
Absolutely. And I think it's up to each of us to define what work is. You know, it's easy to say this is work. If you're going to a job every day, you're getting a paycheck, you need that money, that's clearly work. But if it's a passion project that you're working on and it happens to pay you a little, but it doesn't feel like work to you, if to you that's not work, then great. It's not up to me to say what work is for you. It's up to you to decide that for yourself. So I think that's really the power in this concept of financial independence and what I'm encouraging folks to think of it as is don't get so caught up in what's retirement, what's not retirement, what's work, what's not work. Just try to put yourself in a financial position where you have the choice of how to spend your time, and then you can spend your time in the ways that feel best to you. And money isn't the primary decision maker in that.
I think that's definitely the right way to think about retirement at any time, but especially in an early retirement setting. And I think from the outside, the FIRE movement, which I know you're not a fan of the term, but that movement can seem like, okay, well, someone can do this if they're young in Silicon Valley earning six figures, but you've made a point to say that this isn't the case and that people can achieve financial independence from many backgrounds and no one person's journey to financial independence is the same. And you've done a lot of work to challenge this stereotype and to show that financial independence is really possible for many people. So can you speak more to the idea that you don't have to be in your 30s or even younger to start actively saving, and you don't need a high-powered, you know, tech job to make a financially independent future a reality?
You know, the truth is that if you earn more money, it is easier to save. And there's no point pretending like that's not true. So certainly folks who are young and earning six figures right out of school are going to be at a big advantage in terms of what they're able to save. Particularly if they're able to sock away a lot before they have kids or start to get into more life commitments. But that doesn't mean that that's required of everyone. And I think that we have all been skewed in our view by a few of the really extreme outliers in the community who happen to be some of the very public faces of it. You know, when you're hearing people talk about retiring at 30, 31, 32, or even sometimes in their 20s, it's easy to say, oh, well, that is only possible for a select few. And probably that young it is. But remember, the average man retires right now at 63, the average woman retires at 62, and only a third of those folks retire because they feel personally ready and they make that choice to. So there's still a huge amount of room between late 20s, early 30s, and early 60s. That's a 30-year difference. So if you can retire in your late 50s even, you've gained back years of your life compared to what most people do. If you can push it to your early 50s, maybe you've gained a full decade. So there are a lot of examples. I include some in the book, but there are certainly plenty out there on the internet of people who've managed to retire early in their 40s without ever cracking six figures of combined income in a couple. There are examples of people who've done this as teachers, as government employees, you know, and different income levels for sure. The real power is just keeping your set costs low so that the difference between what you earn and what you spend is as big as possible. And if you can make that gap big, then you can save money regardless of how much you earn. If you're able to increase your income, you'll be able to save faster, but it's not required. And one thing that I feel really strongly about too is this idea of getting rid of the all or nothing thinking. So it's not that you can either retire early or you can't. There are different ways to think about it. And that's why in the book, I talk about semi-retirement and I talk about career intermission. So maybe you don't have enough saved that you can quit for good at 45, but perhaps you could take a year or two off and do something you've always dreamed of doing, but that you don't want to put off until your 60s. Or maybe you can get to a point where you can work 50% of the time and you've set yourself up so that you're solid for traditional retirement. And all you have to do now is cover half of your living expenses through your work, something like that. There are a lot of different options out there, and the only limit is really your own imagination and how you want to shape that financial plan.
Do you find yourself reacting to market news, selling when you should be buying, and buying when you should be selling? Are you making costly investment mistakes? It's time to take control and develop a plan that keeps your investments centered, no matter what direction the markets take. We can help you protect your investments during market downturns and profit when markets rise. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management to create an investment strategy today. Call 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
There's so many creative ways in which you can achieve financial independence or even partial financial independence that, you know, it pays to do some research if that's something you're interested in, because you're right, there are so many examples from people from all different backgrounds and income levels who have been able to do that. And so you were featured in a New York Times article that was published in June called "For These Women, A Fire That Burns Too Male and Too White." And in this piece, they say that you could be the matriarch of the women's fire movement. How would you say financial planning for early retirement is different for women, and perhaps even more important, because we know in the U.S., on average, women live longer than men and therefore need more money saved for retirement. Yet the gender pay gap is still very real, and which affects women's ability to save for a traditional retirement. Research shows that in the U.S., the gender pay gap is decades away from closing for white women, 100 years plus away for black women, and 200 plus years away for Latina women. And we still also have the other gaps like investment gap, the funding gap, the domestic work gap, the debt gap, and the list goes on. But a study by Elevest found that the number one thing that makes women feel in charge of their futures is putting away money for financial goals. So again, why do you find that there's a need for a women's FIRE movement specifically, and how that can affect the financial plan for retiring early?
I think the basic thing, and all of what you said, I totally agree with. All of that is indisputably true. You just listed a bunch of facts. But the main thing is, and I think why I started speaking up in this way is because the FIRE movement has this kind of image of being a bunch of young white men who work in tech. And I kept getting this question from reporters of, wow, well, you're a woman in this space and you didn't work in tech. What's that like when, you know, it's all these tech guys? And I was like, you know what? It's not actually tech guys. There are a bunch of them here, and they just happen to be some of the loudest voices. And they happen to be some of the first ones who were here and spoke up about it. But if you actually look across the spectrum, like I've now met thousands of people in the movement over the course of the last 5 years, very few of them, relatively speaking, are in tech or engineering or things like that. The bulk are doing normal jobs and really cover the spectrum. The other thing too that just frustrated me is you look at somebody like Mr. Money Mustache. He's now divorced, but the whole time he was saving for early retirement, he was married and was married for quite a few years of his early retirement itself. So there, and he's heterosexual, so there was a woman there. She just wasn't the voice of it. And I think you could tell that same story for a lot of the prominent bloggers. So it was, there are women here, they're just not the ones necessarily speaking, or if they are speaking, they aren't being heard. And so my first focus was just, let's get these women heard, because there are a lot of stories here that will help more people feel included in the movement or feel like they belong here. If you only hear from one type of person, there are a lot of folks who are going to say, oh, this isn't for me, I don't fit that mold. And I wanted more folks to see themselves here. So that's the first thing. But I do think, second, you're so right. Women live longer. We tend to earn less. We do not always get the benefit of survivor benefits, that kind of stuff that could help us. And women are much more likely to live in poverty at all stages of life, but especially in retirement. Women are the bulk of minimum wage and low wage earners in almost every state. So there are a ton of obstacles that face women. And that's just in general. That's not even getting into the racial and ethnic breakdowns like you talked about. And you said it's over 100 years for Latina women. It's even worse for Native American women. And there are several different, you know, kind of subgroups who have terrible, terrible wage gaps. So to me, you can't have the discussion about financial independence without talking about who has the opportunity to reach that. And to me, it's not a question of all privilege or no privilege, or can you do this or can you not? It's just acknowledging that some people face bigger hurdles than others. Right. And so we need to be talking about those hurdles too. And that's why really I do the podcast in addition, that isn't strictly about financial independence, but it's really about some of those hurdles and barriers that women and people of color face and people with disabilities, things like that, that maybe don't make every opportunity equal out there.
And do you have any advice or sort of tips for someone who's maybe a little bit later in life who wants to kind of start jumping in on the idea of even just gaining a few years back of their time and starting to more actively save now? Do you have any ideas about what would be a great place for them to start? I know you talk about the lifestyle creep when you have raises, or just a few good ideas to sort of get the ball rolling in the idea of starting to save and become financially independent.
Absolutely. I think first is just mindset of knowing that it's not too late. It's never too late. It's always good to start something today rather than not starting it at all. So I think remind yourself you still have time to do some big things with your money. That's the first thing. Second is try to get your arms around your spending. A shocking number of people don't even know what they spend. And so if you can just track your spending for about 3 months, get a clear sense of, okay, here's how much housing costs. Here's how much I'm spending on things like insurance, taxes, that kind of stuff. And then look at the things that are more discretionary. Look at transportation. Is that higher than it could be? Look at your food, especially restaurants. That tends to be something that folks spend more than they think they do on, and maybe groceries. And then that other category of like vacations, gifts, clothing, the stuff that we don't necessarily need to spend on. And I'm not saying don't spend on that stuff, but knowledge is power. So make sure you know what you're spending on. And then take a look at your priorities of like, what of those things actually make your life better and happier? Having a house, you know, having a roof over your head certainly makes life better. So that's probably yes. worth it. But could you be spending a little bit less on that? Do you need all the house that you have? Do you have a nicer apartment than you need? Looking at things like that could be a good way to identify where you could save a bit. But then even if you don't want to do that part, here's the thing that I think is really powerful is looking at hiding money from yourself. So if you're earning money regularly, let's say twice a month, you get a paycheck. Do you spend that whole amount? And if you do, could you try to squeeze that a little bit? So most payroll departments have a way that you can change your payroll paperwork so that you can split your paycheck. Part can go into a savings account or into an investment account, and then the rest can go into your normal checking account. So maybe start with $100 a month and say, I want to put $100 a month into my savings account instead of checking. And even better, if you can do it at a bank that isn't your normal bank. So you don't see that money. Like if you bank at Bank of America, maybe open an account on Ally, which is high interest online. It's not an endorsement of them. This is just a suggestion. There are lots of others, Marcus and HSBC, things like that. But put that money somewhere else so you don't see it. And then see if you can live on that. And if you can live on that amount, your paycheck minus $100 for a few months, then up it to $200. And keep repeating that every few months until you really start to feel the pinch, because we do tend to subconsciously adapt. And if you give yourself less to spend, you might find that you just spend less. And then if that works for you, if you do get a raise, you can just hide that whole raise. So if you're going to get $1,000 more a year, then increase the amount you're investing automatically each paycheck by $1,000 a year so that you don't ever see that money. That's really what Mark and I did that worked so well for us, was just automating and hiding the money. So we just lived on the same amount for a decade. And it never felt like sacrificing because we weren't trying to squeeze more out of our spending. We were just keeping it level. We would give it little tiny boosts here and there to account for inflation and the rising costs of things. But as we got a number of raises over time, the amount we were saving really skyrocketed, but we never felt that because we weren't having to make that choice every month to sock money away. It was just happening in the background.
I remember reading that sort of description that you just gave in the book as well. And it really stood out to me because it's just a really doable way of kind of saying, okay, you know, paying yourself first, but almost even more so, it's investing in yourself and knowing once that money's put aside, it's, you don't even think about it. It's just already being set away. So I think that's really great advice. And so I'm curious about if you have a better idea for what we should be calling this movement. So if it's not FIRE, do you have something that you think we should start referring to this financial independence and retiring early movement as?
I mean, obviously it's the title of my book, but I really do like the idea of working toward being work optional. And that to me is, it's just much more descriptive, because I think sometimes people will quibble over, well, are you really early retired because you did write this book, or you occasionally blog? And to me, it's just such an unhelpful debate, because retirement is really like, do you feel retired? Then great, you get to call yourself retired. That's not for me to say or for anyone else to say. I think something like work optional is much clearer, that there's nothing to quibble with there. And if you can put yourself in that position where you can work if you feel like it, you don't have to if you don't feel like it, that's really what we're all going for. It's not to have this set of rules of what are you allowed to do? Are you allowed to sit in a rocking chair and play golf and drink umbrella drinks? Yes, you're allowed to do that. But are you allowed to do other things? Like, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole.
No.
Let's just give ourselves the flexibility to be work optional.
Right. So many more productive things than, yeah, policing what other people seem to be doing in their own early retirement. The conversation and the ideas that you've brought to the whole movement, I think, have just been really important, and especially in touching back to that idea of making other voices heard in this movement, and not just because they're the loudest, but other voices, how they're accomplishing their financial independence or retiring early, and the different challenges that women especially will face. And as we wrap up, I know that you have started your Sense Positive conference. If you could talk a little bit about, you know, what those are and how people, if they're interested, can maybe find out about conferences that you have coming up in the next year.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I really kept observing over the years of participating on Twitter, if you're into having money nerd conversations, Twitter is the place to be. That's really where the personal finance community hangs out. And I like to call it the friendliest place on the internet, because by and large, people are just there to support each other. But I kept noticing that women were talking about feeling like there was no place to have their conversations. There were a lot of different events happening across the FI community. You know, there's a Camp Phi series. I've been to a couple of those. They're really great. There are also Camp Mustache events, and I'm sure people are also doing regional events, that kind of thing. But it felt like those were really kind of going with the idea that what men want to talk about is the default and what women want to talk about is a niche issue, never mind that women are more than half the population. And it was not necessarily that women don't want to talk hard numbers or things like that, because they absolutely do, but they also want to be able to talk about, like, okay, how do I reconcile this guilt that I'm feeling that I think there need to be more women in leadership, but yet I'm also engineering my career exit? Or how do I think about planning for early retirement when I know I might also need to care for my aging parents? And that wasn't a conversation that was happening as much in mixed company. So I said, you know what? I'm retired. I'm going to start this event because I've got time to do it and I have the skills to be able to make this happen. So we had the first event of Sense Positive in 2018 in Denver. This year we had two events that just wrapped in Seattle and Chicago, and they were all so wonderful. And it's great to be in company, first of all, where you can talk about money without feeling any stigma or taboo. I think that goes for men and women. Mm-hmm. But even more so, I think, for women, because women are just socialized in a different way and taught to be really considerate of others' feelings, and talking about taboo topics is not considerate. So being able to talk about money, talk about the emotion that goes around with it, and just to feel very safe and comfortable, I think is a really powerful thing. And I feel so privileged to get to work on these events and to get to do them for women, and to see the breakthroughs that people are having there. I also feel privileged to get to do the events for free for me. You know, I don't make money off them, so I can just price them totally at cost, which makes them as accessible as possible. That's something that wouldn't be possible if I wasn't early retired, so I'm really grateful for that. In 2020, there will likely be 3 events. None of them are announced yet, but I'm working on doing one for couples, which will actually be a different thing than we've done in the past, but to try to create a kind of similar space, but for couples of all different makeup. So that can be gay, straight, poly, you know, whatever sort of partnership relationship mm-hmm. you've got is welcome there. But to talk really about the partnership money issues that come up and all the different ways that couples or partnerships might manage money. Then there will likely be one in Canada for the first time, which I'm excited about. Americans are certainly welcome to go to it, but Canadian audiences have been asking for one there. And then likely one next fall in about a year in the Southeast. So lots of good stuff coming up. And the best way to stay current on that is just to visit sensepositive.com, C-E-N-T-S, positive.com, and get on the newsletter. No spam ever, just keeping folks posted on upcoming events.
Yes, and they sound like excellent conferences that are really doing important work. And I also love the idea of doing one for couples as well. And so as we wrap, if you have anything else that you would like to let our listeners know about that you have coming up in the works, as well as where people can access your book, Work Optional, if they haven't already purchased it.
Yeah, I'm really just trying to focus on really being early retired. which is a fun thing. I'm learning that not everybody is equally able to fully slow down instantly. And I'm definitely a person who does a lot of stuff. So my focus for the next little bit is doing less. But that said, I still blog about once a month at ournextlife.com. We have a new season of the podcast, The Fairer Sense, C-E-N-T-S, just like Sense Positive, that's coming out in a couple of months. And the book is in all the book places. You can find it wherever. But if you just go to one place, ournextlife.com, will have links to all that stuff and where I am on social, especially Twitter and Instagram, so you can join the conversation.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tanya. And until next time, thanks so much for listening to Lifetime Planning.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.